with the first pick.
Welcome back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Again, last week we talked a little bit of combine, free agency's underway. We're going to work through our linebacker rankings. We're down to linebackers, running backs, and quarterbacks. So we'll get to linebackers today. We also have some NFL draft, you know, big trade news to go over. But before we get into anything, again, Devin, we're here. How are you, man?
Good. Just trying to, every time I pop on Twitter, there's three new free agency deals, even though they're small. So just trying to keep up with it. Went somewhere today and I was like, maybe I should check. It was like 20, 25 minutes. So I was like, maybe I should check, see if anything Philly related. And then the Eagles re-sign James Bradberry to a three-year deal, which no one saw coming. So it's a wild week, man. It's a wild week.
It's because it's moving so slow and then spurts, and it's moving so slow and spurts. And like last year, like Schefter and Rappaport were dropping 1201 bombs, like on, and then like it's like, all right, it's 1215, all right, it's 1220, it's 1230, and it was like probably 1230 before that TJ Edwards the Bears deal came out. Like we waited a long time for that first deal, and I just sat here refreshing. I think teams are a little more worried about tampering and a little bit more worried about fines and losing picks because the NFL has kind of picked up on it over the past couple of years. So,
for sure.
But it's been a little bit slower. We don't need to, again, we're a draft podcast, so we don't need to talk too much about free agency. But Devin, there was a big, big trade last week, right on the verges of free agency, as the Chicago Bears struck an agreement with the Carolina Panthers to ship out the number one pick. They fall back to 9 and pick up a ton of assets, including wide receiver DJ Moore, who I saw his stat, he's 25 years old. Where DJ Moore sits right now in his career in receiving yards, he would be the best wide receiver in Chicago Bears franchise history.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, the trade itself, we heard rumblings of Carolina being interested in one at the combine. A lot of people were expecting the Colts to make the move, but even the Colts people were like, we don't think so. We don't think it would be us that make the move. And Carolina swoops in and gets the number one pick. Now it's who are they going to pick? I mean, everyone expects it to be C.J. Stroud and probably should be C.J. Stroud. But, of course, there's a Anthony Richardson allure. Maybe they like Bryce Young. I would be very surprised if they chose Will Levis out of all four. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think it probably comes down to Stroud or Richardson. So we'll see what they want. I mean, they've gone the Richardson type of archetype before, obviously with Cam Newton and what he was able to do with Carolina. So we'll see. They certainly have their work cut out for them because I mean, DJ Moore departing that room is certainly not going to help the quarterback coming in. I know they got Terrace Marshall and some other guys on that roster, but they will definitely need to be active either via trade or via the draft in terms of bringing some more receiver talent. But it was certainly a big deal and shakes up things. And finally, the Bears are, we can stop talking about them possibly replacing Justin Fields.
Right. This haul, though, again, we talked a little bit about it. DJ Moore, the 9th overall pick, the 61st overall pick this year, a 2024 first rounder and a 2025 second rounder. And DJ Moore had offers for a first round pick at the deadline. So that's essentially another first round pick. So the Bears came out pretty handsomely here, came out pretty handsomely. So again, we know Carolina's going for the Panthers. They're going for quarterback. I don't buy any of their, oh, we could trade down if, you know, we feel confident we can get our guys somewhere. No, they're not. That's bogus. They're sitting at 1, they're taking a quarterback. Again, I tend to think it's probably CJ Stroud as well. That's a lot of assets to gamble, I would say, for an extreme outlier, the way that Bryce Young is an extreme outlier with the size. Again, he's a really good quarterback, and I don't think we can really debate that, but man, he's tiny. So if they're going to go that way, and looking at the mold of quarterbacks that Frank Reich has worked with, he thrives with pocket passers who have the ability to create a little bit, but I don't know if what we saw in Indianapolis is a really good representation because he always got stuck with vets. Like he advocated for Carson Wentz, so that one's kind of on him. But like he got stuck with Jacoby Brissett and Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz. So it's like, get this. And then Matt Ryan this year, you know. So like I don't know if this guy's ever had the chance to actually mold a quarterback, but I think CJ Stroud and Frank Reich is a tremendous pairing. But now we get to talk about a little bit about like what's Chicago gonna do at nine. And again, we're in the midst of free agency, and Chicago has a ton of money still, so that can really alter things as well. Like Orlando Brown is still on the market; they were interested in Mike McGlinchey, so they could pay an offensive tackle and decide they don't want to go there at nine. But as it stands, they still need an offensive tackle. So, Devin, what are you thinking that the mindset of the Bears is heading into that ninth overall pick now?
Yeah, I think they're going to continue to be active in the kind of the rest of the tackle market and see what they can get for possibly Orlando Brown or whoever's left. But I mean, if they don't get a tackle in free agency, I think they should strongly consider taking one at nine. Paris Johnson Jr. seems like a ready-made fit for that team. Obviously, teammate of Justin Fields back in the day. So I think that would be a great option. Maybe they go the Skowronski route and have a guy, you know, people are debating whether he should be a guard or tackle, but I think he could be a pretty good left tackle for the Bears, someone that's going to come in and be ready to play and compete at the highest level. So to me, I think those are probably the top two options at tackle wise, but there's always you can bring in another receiver. You can get a Jackson Smith and Jigba and really go all in on your weaponry. So they have some good options at nine. And then obviously they don't have to get in the receiver class at nine. They could wait into second round. Obviously they have that 61st pick now too. So you're going to have some pretty good day two receivers as well that you can add to the crop that you know could be really good alongside DJ Moore, obviously Darnell Mooney too. Chase Claypool is in that mix. So they have a good assortment of receivers on staff already. But I think you can even bolster a little bit more if you don't go the tackle route at nine. But to me, it's got to be tackle or receiver if you're the Bears.
Yeah, I agree. I think edge is a little bit sneaky as well. They just signed, you know, they signed a defensive tackle and DeMarcus Walker, but they're still missing an edge. So I think that could be sneaky. Right now they have Dominique Robinson and Travis Gibson, two day three picks, you know, at edge. And you know, the talk of the combine was the Bears like Tyree Wilson. So there's also talk that Tyree Wilson could go above Will Anderson. So, I mean, if the team lets Will Anderson fall there, they would happily take him, I think. But I think Tyree Wilson could be a sneaky pick at nine as well. But I think we're right on the money. Wide receiver, edge, offensive tackle. We'll see how the rest of free agency plays out. That'll shake up a little bit because, again, there are a couple good offensive tackles still in the market. So, and the Bears are flush with cash. So we'll see how that kind of plays out. But I think we're kind of right on the money there that it's probably one of those three positions. However, this would be really ballsy. Really ballsy. And I don't know where Ryan Poles stands on like analytics or positional value, whatnot. David Montgomery just signed with the Detroit Lions. It would be very ballsy to take Bijan Robinson 9
Oh,
overall.
it would be very, but I'm intrigued by a backfield of Justin Fields and Bijan. I know it's probably, I mean, you got to get your tackle free agency if you're going to go that route, but I'm not opposed to the idea at all. He should, I mean, we're talking realistically, he should be a top 10 pick, talking about Bijan Robinson, but we know the positional value aspect of it. And I mean, there's a good chance maybe they even want to trade back even further. If they really are in on Bijan, maybe they can recoup another day two pick by trading back a few spots and still take Bijan. So they got options, man, for sure. They definitely have some holes to fill. So to me, I think it really comes down to who was the best player on our board that we can take right now at nine, and they're gonna have a good pick. Considering there's probably going to be four quarterbacks to go off in the top 10, as we're expecting.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Four quarterbacks, top 10. I think Levis is the odd man out of the top. You know, I do think it's going to be quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. I think Arizona would be silly not to trade back. Silly not to trade back. Again, you're without your starting quarterback for a good chunk of the season. It makes no sense not to stack assets for next year because you're going to have a high draft pick next year. So I think they would be dumb not to trade out of three, and I think we will get that. I think Indianapolis is maybe going to get a little trigger happy. they're kind of floating some stuff out in the media right now, like, oh, they might not even take quarterback this year. They're not sold on any of these guys. And I think that's just a little bit of media smoke screen to see, like, well, what if nobody trades up? Like, what if we can convince nobody to trade up to three because they don't think we're gonna, but I don't think anybody's gonna fall for that. Chris Ballard's on the hot seat and they're gonna take quarterback. That's pretty much what it comes down to. But very interesting stuff, man. We got, I mean, I don't think that's the last trade. Obviously, we just talked about the Cardinals, so this stuff could really shake out. Now, again, the combine's over, free agency is into day two. Next week, we could do a mock draft again and really like what are these teams' needs after this and kind of what do our big boards look like after the combine as well and kind of meet match those and marry those into a mock draft. So I'm really looking forward to that. But again, we are moving on to linebackers. Again, we have done every other position outside of linebackers, running backs, quarterbacks. So we are getting there. But again, linebackers today, Devin. Outside of the top two guys, man, I don't like this class at all. I don't know if you feel that way, but like outside of those top two guys, like we're talking mid day two guys, early day three guys that you really just need to find a fit for. I don't know if you felt like that, but it was kind of boring for me to watch these guys and kind of grind through that.
Yeah, 'cause like all of them, a good bit of them are not like, they're not traditional linebackers in the sense. You know, like a lot of them are playing overhang, playing kind of stack position. And then at the point of attack, a lot of them are going around blocks. They're not really taking on blocks as well. They're not really doing the things you see like the top-notch linebackers and even some of the pass as well. Have done. Like you think about some of the other classes we had in linebackers and the classes we had, like, you know, like the Devon Lloyd class, like, you know, you just gotta, it's kind of difficult because like these guys are gonna be specific scheme fits, you know, after the top two guys. And then you're really gonna have to get creative with how you deploy some of them. Some of them are good blitzers, but don't bring a ton else. Some are a little bit of pass rush, a little bit of coverage ability, but aren't the greatest in the box. So it really is like choose your flavor and choose your fit. Because I mean, pretty much three through like seven or eight, you can kind of stack them depending on what your preference is for linebackers.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. Again, I tend to, especially in today's NFL, and it's getting a little bit different. You know, this last season was the most successful running season, rushing season that we've seen in a little while. So again, we could come back a little bit to some more, you know, throwback physical linebackers. But as teams are playing 11 personnel and really airing the ball out, look at the offenses that are thriving in the NFL right now. It's like teams that are running 11 personnel, a lot of shotgun and just throwing the football over the field. So I've kind of tended to lean towards like, if you have pretty good coverage ability, I'm going to bump you up my list a little bit. So to where, you know, 5, 6 years ago, we're probably not talking like that. So just a little bit of my philosophy, but before, you know, that's probably enough talk about anything other than our rankings, Devin. So I'll let you go first. Who is number five on your list?
Yeah, so number five for me is Texas linebacker DeMarvion Overshown, former safety that switched to linebacker a couple years ago. Actually talked about that story at the combine. He had some dogs in the secondary. It was a Caden Stearns year, and they had a few other dudes in the secondary that he was playing alongside. And you know, conversation between he and defensive coordinator and Tom Herman at the time, just to make that decision to switch. I think it suited him well. I think he otherwise probably would have been probably a late day three pick at safety because he's not the fastest guy, the most explosive guy, but he can move. He can get from point A to point B pretty quickly. I played a lot of the overhang, a lot of the will linebacker role at Texas. They deployed him in pass rushes. They let, you know, they dropped him and played him in man coverage against running backs. So just off the bat, I like kind of the diversity of usage of his ability. Having that safety background, being able to cover ground and cover space and coverage, I thought his eyes were pretty good and getting dropping the zones and getting into passing lanes. I also liked his ability to kind of redirect and find the football, kind of like outside the box on screens. A lot of the times, he's flying down the line of scrimmage and being able to make plays outside the box and a little bit outside his frame. Where I have problems with them is obviously he's not going to It's going to take him a little bit to be a true attacking downhill linebacker. He just doesn't take on blocks well, kind of moves around him a little bit. Thought his hand usage could have been better at the point of attack. You know, there were times he did shock the offensive lineman, but just struggled like finding the football, like stacking and shedding and getting to the ball. And there were just times like when he did do it, he would like kind of arm tackle, or you know, he would just didn't give the greatest effort, you know, getting off of blocks and making or tracking down the football. The effort and the motor are there. I love that ability. Like I said, the coverage ability to do that and find drops and getting to passing lanes are there. Even rushing a passer, he has some pretty good. He's a pretty good spin move. But just overall, just the in the box ability just was lacking a little bit for me, and why he ended up at number five.
Yeah, Overshown landed outside my just outside. He landed at six for me, and predominantly because of that, most of his reps, most of his good reps, my favorite reps of Overshown, I should say, came at overhang, came in the slot, you know, came off the edge as a blitzer. So I think there is a good amount of versatility to his game, but at the end of the day, we're talking about a linebacker, and I really struggled with his eyes when he was stacked at the second level. So I think there's a pathway for him to see the field. I think he could be a Will, but I think he could be a Dimebacker. I think he's probably going to really have to fight his way out of the field early in his career, though. So to me, that screams like fringe top 100 player. Probably fourth round range is where I would feel most comfortable with him. So just outside my top five for a lot of the same reasons that you said. For me, my five. Is my boy Dorian Williams from Tulane. He's a bit of a throwback. He's a bit of a throwback. I love the turf tape, wristband, no gloves, dreads hanging out the helmet. Like, he is just aesthetically one of the best looking linebackers on the field. And his play kind of backs it up, man. Like, I do think he struggles to stack and shed. I think his eyes are pretty raw. I think he just tends to get shot out of a cannon, and go balls to the wall into his gap. So I do think there's some room for improvement there, but that dude is not afraid to lower his shoulder. That dude has heavy hands. He's not afraid to get into people's chests. He's a solid tackler. Again, I think he over pursues a little bit in space and probably over scrapes working in run support. But man, he's athletic as well, and he does it from a stack position. And if you look at the trajectory of his career, redshirt or sophomore season, he played overhang. Junior season, he played Will, which was his worst graded season according to PFF. Senior season, he played Mike, his best season of his career. I think this guy is a dude who you can draft late third round, and that you have a solid vet on your roster at Mike, you know, 1, 2 years left on their deal to mentor this guy and get him ready to go the next year. That's the kind of player I think Dorian is, and he's athletic, man. Like, there's some reps in this on his tape where he, you know, he is tracking tight ends. He's not afraid to robot out and track up the seam a little bit. He's not asked to do it a whole lot. His coverage profile is pretty raw as well because he's not asked to do a whole lot at Tulane. But at the Senior Bowl, there's reps of him tracking running backs on out and ups up the sideline. Like, this guy can move. He can get his pursuit sideline to sideline is explosive. I think there's a lot to like about Dorian Williams' game overall. I do think he's still pretty raw in read react diagnosing. But when he sees something, man, his trigger's fast. He's explosive. So I like Dorian a lot.
Yeah, Dorian just missed my top five, but he was actually number six for me. And I really like this game. I mean, I thought, you know, especially like the stacking, the shedding ability, I thought, you know, kind of is I don't want to say lack of length, but the length I could tell was bothering him a little bit, trying to redirect and track down ball carriers while he's getting blocked. But I really liked his ability. Like you said, he shot out of a cannon. Does a really nice job, you know, tracking down the football, and he gets to the football quickly. It has some really impressive tape, so I liked him. To me, Overshown just edged him out a little bit, but Dorian Williams, man, he's a good football player. I think he's going to be one of those 3-4 contract dudes that just finds a way to stick around, and people are, you know. I don't think he's ever going to be like a top linebacker, but he's going to be like a reliable starting linebacker at the NFL level.
100% in agreement. 100% in agreement. So, we can sneak this a little bit. I'll go ahead and say my four. So for me, four, and this is low from where consensus is at, because this guy's in like some people's top 25s, man. Like, and I'm way, way, way below that, but it's Drew Sanders out of Arkansas. I get it. I mean, I get it. He's a freak. His frame, like, he's built in the lab, in terms of, you know, what you're looking for. 6'5", 230. Like, that's a pretty decent frame to build off of. And this was his first year playing off-ball linebacker after playing edge at Alabama last year. So he's understandably raw. So I get the traits and I get wanting to be high on him, but man, he's soft. Like, he's really soft. He's versatile, but he's really soft. There's nothing packed in his hands. I don't think he stacks and sheds well for how much length he has. He doesn't work through the chest well either when he is blitzing. I think he does win outside shoulder when he's lined up at Sam. So, like, yeah, are you drafting this guy to play Sam and then a designated pass rusher on passing situations? Like, is that your plan for him? Because, like, I don't see it at Mike right now. I don't see it at Mike right now, and I think that's why where people are valuing him. And even at Arkansas, man, like, his coverage profile is slim. I don't think I saw a rep of him either not covering a running back out of the backfield or sitting hook curl or spying. And that was pretty much his entire coverage profile. So I get the traits. I get wanting to be high on Drew Sanders, but man, is he a massive, massive projection right now. And that's just, that's really raw. Like, that's really, really raw.
Yeah, man, he's my 4-2 and he scares me. I am terrified of drafting him anywhere really in the top 50 because, like, where do you play him? You know, it's just like, and for me, it was like, at first, I was like, okay, he missed a couple tackles, but like, he's there, you know, like, he's in the right spot. But it kept like persisting, like, he's missing tackles. Like, it's not, even when he makes tackles, it's not really physical. Like, he's like pulling them down. So, like, I don't know if it's a weight thing, like, is it like a strength thing, or is he going to play linebacker? Like, yeah, he has some flashy plays, you know, like, especially coming off the edge. He had an interception that was really nice, but really outside of that, like, I was finding there was like several dozen plays sometimes in between his best reps, and it was like, I don't know how much can you bet on that. You know, like, it's such a projection, man. I like Drew Sanders' athletic ability. I think he has great size, great speed, but like, everything else is like, it's kind of a projection at this point. Like, the tackling profile to me wasn't fantastic. The coverage profile wasn't anything special. And just the eyes were just so inconsistent from down to down. So for me, it was very difficult to like understand like what his upside is, but like, you got to find that line in between. Like, is he making these plays? Like, are we sure that he's going to be like a stacked inside linebacker NFL level? And I can't say that definitively.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about like some of the higher ceiling players, but some really, really low floor players like Gervin Dexter, defensive tackle out of Florida. I would say he's got a really high ceiling, but a really low floor. Jalin Hyatt, Tennessee wide receiver, really high ceiling, really low floor because he's just so raw. I would put Drew Sanders in the same category as Hyatt and as Gervin Dexter because, yeah, the ceiling's extraordinary, but that floor, man, his floor is low. So, and then I just pulled this up from PFF, our friends at PFF, in 2022 alone, with the Razorbacks, 22 missed tackles, 19.6% of his attempts. Missed nearly a fifth of his tackles in 2022.
That's like I said, that the missed tackling was the big thing for me, because like, that's what you do at linebacker. You can't get around missing tackles. Like, that is what you have to do. And if you're missing 19% of your tackles, man, it's a hard sell.
Very hard sell. Very hard sell. So who's three for you then, Devin? Because I think we're going to have the same one and two in whatever order we have it, but who's three for you?
Yeah, Diane Henley from Washington State.
So we have the same top three then.
Yeah, we do.
Love it.
So, man, the first thing that stood out to me was like he always gets to the ball. Like he always is finding the football, always making tackles, always reliable. I was really surprised by his coverage profile. Like I saw what he did in one-on-ones at the Senior Bowl, but I mean, it matches up on tape. Like he's finding his hook to curl zones. He's getting in passing lanes. His drops look smooth. He's just an all around smooth football player. Like he's not gonna wow you physically or athletically, but he's dependable. He gets his spots. The age is really the only big thing. I believe he's 24 years old already. So you know that could. I think it probably makes him probably a mid day two pick already, just by that age. But look, I think he's going to be a reliable linebacker at the NFL level. I've really had very few things that I didn't like about his game. Stacking and shedding was a little inconsistent, but really, I think no one in this class like is excels at that, and you're just beating dudes to the spot at this point. But I really liked his profile in general. The Senior Bowl really gave me a kind of an introduction to him and what he was able to bring to the table. And you go back to the tape and it matches. So I really had no complaints about him. It was an easy number three for me with Henley.
Yep, I'm right there with you at three, man. Again, he will be 24 in November. So he's a sixth-year player. Started out as a wide receiver at Nevada. After 2 years, made the switch to linebacker at Nevada, and then transferred out to Washington State this season. And those instincts and coverage show up. Like I talked to him a little bit about that at the combine. Like how do your instincts as a wide receiver help you in coverage? And he chopped it up for me a little bit, and it shows on tape because. He's very good at anticipating route concepts. He's very good at understanding, like, I'm passing this guy off here, I'm probably getting this right behind me. Very smart player, very smart player. And talking about Drew Sanders' tackling attempts, here's Dan Henley's. He missed five tackles in all of 2022, 5% of his attempts. So a much better tackler, a very good tackler, by the standard. So he's got that coverage profile. Again, a little light in terms of stacking and shedding, in terms of what you want to see at the point of attack. But again, he's a firm tackler. He's great in coverage. I think he's athletic and he's fluid in space, man, too. He's real fluid in space. So Dan Henley, I also have about a mid third on him. So mid day two grade on Henley, and I think that's a great spot for him. Just a really smart, energetic player. And he was fun to talk to at the combine as well, man. But yeah, I have Henley sitting at three as well. So and this might be where we get into a little bit of discrepancy. And for me, the difference between these two and one, let me pull this up real fast. Is 0.047 on my grading scale, the difference between them. There's two players on my big board in between them. But number two for me is Trenton Simpson from Clemson. I think Trenton Simpson has the highest ceiling in the class. Again, he's explosive, man. Explosive. When he triggers, man, he can get boundary to boundary. He can play in the slot. He's pretty good in coverage. I think his eyes are a little rough sometimes, but when he does read react, like, his trigger is unbelievable. And I think some people want to compare him to like a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, like, oh, he's undersized and he's kind of an overhang and maybe he's a safe, but like, this dude's 6'3", 235. Like, he's a big dude. He's a big dude. So I think that's, he's very firm, a linebacker, and he's not an overhang. I think he's a stack backer. He can play stacked at the second level. If you need him to kick out to the slot, he can do that on some reps as well. I think he can be a tight end and a seam eraser. I have a high second grade on him, a high second round grade on him. So a borderline first round grade. So these top two guys I really like. But Trenton Simpson's going to come in at two for me, and I do think he probably goes first round. I think he's a pretty good bet to be the first backer off the board. But there is still just a little bit of rawness to his game with his eyes that make me hesitant to stick him at one. So I've got him at two right now.
Yeah, for me, he's higher on my list. I have Jack Campbell from Iowa, number two. And we were talking about this before we started recording, but Campbell probably has probably the best, I would say, eyes, especially like recognizing route combinations in the class, probably, I would say. And for me, he was just phenomenal at finding dig routes, at finding crossing routes. It was a rare time where a linebacker was like physically like turning and like finding routes that you saw on tape, and he was anticipating it, and could tell he does deep film study. He's 6'5". I mean, he's a big dude that moves extremely well for his size. Able to beat dudes to the point of attack. Obviously, his Ohio State game is lauded, but I think his Purdue game is just as good in terms of his coverage ability and what shows his coverage profile. For me, it was like very, very tight between him and Simpson. I think it was like 1.2 points separating the two. But for me, with Campbell, I thought he did a pretty good job of stacking and shedding. And being able to stick with running backs and tight ends in space, especially. I think sometimes his over aggressiveness was used against him a little bit, especially in that Michigan game. I think he's ready to attack downhill so quickly that sometimes he can, the end arounds and some of the eye candy can get him a little bit, just because he's ready to attack and get downhill. So I saw that quite a bit. He was a little bit out of position, especially in that Michigan game. But overall, I really liked his ability to once he was in making drops in coverage and getting in the passing lanes. He was effective. And he was effective giving off blocks too. He was taking on guards and tackles, and stacking and shedding. So he is certainly, I would say, probably the most complete linebacker right now, compared to Simpson. But I do like Simpson's upside and his physical profile a little bit better than I do Campbell's, but I like Campbell's game, man.
Man, I'm right there with you on Campbell. And that's every year, man, I fall for linebackers who aren't afraid to get downhill, meet offensive linemen at the point of attack, and stack shed at a high level. Last year was Leo Chenal. Leo Chenal was my linebacker one. And guess what? Him or Chad Muma, maybe, but like he was probably the best rookie linebacker a year ago. Even though he was taken almost at the end of the third round, like and I just had that same feeling about Jack Campbell. Different players. Again, Leo Chenal was used a little bit more as a designated pass rusher, asked to be a bit of a battering ram through the A gap quite a bit for Wisconsin. But I thought when he was asked to kind of drop into coverage, he showed a good profile that I could project. I don't have to project with Campbell because his coverage profile is much better than people led me on to believe before I turned on his tape. That Ohio State game is one of the best games I've watched all cycle. Jack Campbell versus Ohio State. Any prospect, any position, that is one of my favorite tapes I've watched. He's so freaking smart, man. He's unbelievably smart to just understand route concepts, to feel out digs, hooks, posts behind him, and get in passing lanes. Like, it's unreal. And again, I think there some people had athleticism concerns, and he came out of the combine and said, like, what athleticism concerns? So, he checks every box for me that I would look for in a linebacker. Again, the coverage profile is there. People might say it's raw or it's incomplete, but I think it's there. I think it's there. Getting downhill, it's there. Getting sideline to sideline, it's there. Like, this guy checks every box for me. So I don't have any concerns. I think, again, he's smart. His eyes are very keyed in, very refined. Like, if I were a GM, I would probably take Jack Campbell as the first linebacker off the board if I had the opportunity to. But again, because I think he can be a three down Mike who has the ability to rotate down the seam when asked to. Even if those are kind of rare on tape, I mean, it's on tape though. Like, it's there. He checks every box, man. Every box. Again, him and Simpson are close, but man, I really like Campbell. Heavy hands, firm tackler, sideline to sideline, athletic, big, like everything, every box checked. So I was blown away by Jack Campbell.
Yeah, he was a good player, man. Like I said, the Purdue game really kind of opened my eyes, 'cause like, at first, like, like the thing about the Big Ten, man, is like, outside of like the Purdue and Ohio State tape, not a lot of teams are throwing throwing like they are. So like to me, those are like the two games like I wanted to see because like I knew they were going to test him, especially over the middle of the field. There was a rep and Jack. It was actually a rep that Jackson Smith and Jigba played against Iowa, and he ran like a corner route and Campbell. It was like a play action corner route, and Campbell like bit a little bit inside, but then he found where Smith and Jigba was going, got underneath the corner route. And it made Stroud come off of it and check down to the running back. So the coverage profile, not only like on finding like digs and like vertical routes, but like corner routes too, was really impressive. But the reason for me that Trenton Simpson was number one on my linebacker rankings, I just love the tenacity he plays with. Like he's always flying to the football. Everything's not perfect on film. Like he's not a perfect stack and shedder. He's not perfect with taking the best angles or has the best eyes, but he's always gonna find a way to impact the game. And I love that ability. So for me, my favorite game of his was the ACC championship game, and he was terrorizing North Carolina's offensive line. I know they don't have the high caliber offensive line like Ohio State or like some of the bigger programs, but what he was able to do as a blitzer, they were throwing him on Josh Downs and like running him in the slot. And I was like, this dude is insane, insane athletically. And they felt that comfortable with him leaving on the island with like Josh Downs and some of that talented receiving core, the tight ends as well. I just love his ability to be all over the football field. I think he, like you said, I think he can be a stack backer. A lot of people questioning if he's just an overhang, is he undersized? He fits in the box, man. For the Florida State game was a little rough at times, just like getting off blocks cleanly, but even in that game, he's still making flash plays. So for me, once he puts it all together, his eyes, improve even better. I'm betting on his upside to be, one of the premier linebackers in NFL. I think he can get to that level.
Yeah. I mean, it's razor thin for me, man. I mean, I really like his explosiveness, his trigger, his ability, athleticism. Again, he puts his butter in space, man. Like, oh. So I came in talking a little bit of about this linebacker class, but I really do like Simpson and Campbell. I think those are both probably day one starters who are gonna make an impact on a defense. It was razor thin, razor thin. Devin, who are like one or two names that are pretty killer names that just wound up a little bit outside of your top five.
I'm gonna start with Noah Sewell from Oregon. Man, it was such a puzzling watch to sit down and watch his film because like everyone was talking about him as maybe a top five, top 10 player coming into the year, and he just looked slow on film. And I don't know what it was like. I don't know if he bulked up and just wasn't the same player speed wise or what his eyes were doing like. There were times he was legitimately lost on the football field, and it's like, where is this like supremely athletic and talented linebacker that everyone loved last year? Where did he go this year? And to me, there were like too many lapses in coverage. Like he was like looking around, like trying to find where he's supposed to be. I was confused after watching the film. Like I like very rarely had to watch like five or six games of dudes. I watched the fifth game just to see, like, am I missing something with him? Like, is there something that I'm missing? And it was just like, I don't know. He just did a complete 180 as a player. He just didn't look like the confident player, wasn't taking on blocks really. Like, he would make a few plays here and there, like, okay, like, all right, you're on the field still. But, like, I just, there were legitimately like stretches of plays where, like, where is he at? Where is he going? It was a frustrating watch, man. I don't know where he gets drafted. I don't know where his stock looks like right now. I honestly thought he should have went back to school, man.
Yeah, it doesn't help that he changes directions like on a 4-point turn as well. So, oh man, like he's very linear. I think I was talking to a buddy at the combine, and he's like, I just think he sees red all the time. And I think that's a good way to put it. Like he just chases the football, just gets downhill and chases the football. And that's not a good thing a lot of the time. So, yeah, I mean, I put a fourth round grade on him. And mainly that's because he came into the combine and did some things I didn't expect him to do at the combine. So, it's rough because again, we were talking about this guy as a top 10, top 15 player this summer. And now we're like, oh, this guy's not gonna get his name called in the top 100. Like that's where we're sitting. Yeah, that was rough. Another one for me, again, I hit Overshown, you hit Williams. Owen Papo and Henry To'o To'o, two guys out of the SEC. For me, Henry To'o To'o he's a cat with a laser pointer. Like that dude will sniff any sort of misdirection and chase it. And that's a huge liability. It doesn't help that he's not very physical and then went out of the combine and didn't test very athletic. I'm not on board with To'o To'o. The way that I've seen some others, like he's not physical. Cat chasing laser pointer, no coverage profile, like no versatility really. Like you're not gonna stick that guy at overhang, you're not gonna play him at Sam. Like he's either at Mike or he's not on the field. So is he gonna be on the field? Because I'd struggle to see it. And then Papo, a freak athlete, man, freak athlete. But some of those same coverage things that you saw with Sewell, I saw with Papo, like he's kind of turning his head, looking both ways, trying to like see people behind him instead of kind of feeling out things naturally. And then his physical play strength doesn't show up. Like his physicality, his athleticism, his brute force that he has, obviously, as an athlete, just doesn't show up on tape. Doesn't show up on tape at all. I don't see heavy hands. I don't see a guy who can stack shed. I don't see a guy who can deconstruct blocks. It's like, it honestly looks like he's playing the game in slow motion a little bit. Like he's not playing full speed. Like there's still a mental lapse there where he's not playing full speed, and that's evident on his tape. So those two guys really stick out to me as well.
Yeah, Papo, I felt the same way. His eyes were just so inconsistent. Like, that was even before I started watching him, or like I was watching Derek Hall and Leota. You could see him just like running, and, like chasing misdirection, and like the play's going the other way. So it's like the physical tool today, I think he's probably, I could see him going the first three rounds because the team wants the athleticism on his team. He's going to at least be a high level special teamer, for sure. Just on that, those physical gifts alone. But it's going to take some time, with Papo for sure. One more name I want to bring up that, we talked about this, or we talked about this player, Ivan.
I know who it's gonna be. Yeah, I knew it was gonna be Ivan Pace Jr., man. I knew it.
So I feel like we would be remiss not to talk about, Ivan Pace and, because like, look, I mean, people, they're gonna love him. They're gonna love his personality, his physicality, but I think we both know where I'm going with this. He is a blitzer. That does not, how can I say this? He does not thrive moving laterally. And redirecting. And you know, it's gonna be a role for that at the NFL level. Like they just want to attack downhill and blitz and cause havoc, but like I just don't know what to do with him, man. Like it is so difficult to figure out what to do with Ivan Pace. Cause it's like I feel like teams are gonna love him. Love is, you know, just the way he plays, but like, how playable is that? Is my question. So.
Again, it makes sense. I had the same feelings with Cincinnati's Mike Backer last year, the middle linebacker last year, and Darren Beavers, because I also felt like, oh, this guy's a designated pass rusher. Like this guy just comes downhill. And I was like, Darren Beavers is a Sam. And people were really high on Darren Beavers. And I wasn't one of those guys. I was like, this guy's stiff. This guy's, I mean, he's long and he's got some nice explosiveness, but like, what does he do other than come downhill? And I feel the same. And again, it's this definitely Cincinnati scheme thing, but like, those are even more exacerbated in Ivan Pace, who's 5'10 and 230 pounds. Like his body type is tiny. There's a reason he didn't test at the combine. There's a reason he didn't do a damn thing at the combine. Like, so like, I think like if this guy's going to see the field, he's going to be a base Sam backer. And like, that might be it. That might be it, man. Like, He's kind of fun to watch on tape, but like I don't see what's going to translate. And like when he does read React, and I mean his stat pads are amazing. Like he's got a ton of tackles to his name, but like they're all like 3 or 4 yards off the ball. Like he's not initiating the point of attack when he is forced to play and kind of read React in the second level. It's like, oh, these are all 3, 4 catching off the line, like off the ball here. So like I don't know what I don't know what translates. Again, we'll see if he does drills or if he tests that at Cincinnati's Pro Day, which I think is next week. Man, I don't know what he does at the next level.
Yeah, that to me, the game that shows that the most has to be the two-lane game. Like him, like one-on-one in a phone booth with Tajay Spears is like, all right, like I get
Tajay Spears got
Tajay
him on
special.
skates. Yep.
Yeah, I
Oh.
get it, there was a play at the, it was like no, it was a Wildcat play. And it was basically both them, it was like Oklahoma drill, both of them like meeting in a phone booth and he had no chance.
It's rough. It's rough. He's a purely box player that if you get him to space, like you're in trouble. Like you're in trouble big time. So, I he'll get drafted. I think I have a sixth round grade, a fifth round grade on him. Somebody's gonna like him, but like, let me look up something real fast. I want to see if he even played special teams at Cincinnati. Because if he didn't, like, then like, how are you gonna get on the field? How are you gonna get on the field? Okay, he played field goal block and a little bit on punt return, but that was pretty much it.
He didn't even play on a punt team. To me, he feels like one of those.
Three snaps on punt coverage in the bowl game when they had a bunch of people opt out.
Oh, man.
That's the only punt coverage snaps he played the whole season. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That one's tough. I have a fifth on him too, so it's like I already see him going later day three, but it's like we're just waiting on testing. Cause like the thing was like going into the scene, but we knew he was going to dominate the one-on-ones with the running backs, like, you know, trying to block him. That is his bread and butter. And like if he's allowed to like shoot gaps, like he's going to do that. But it's like we saw as soon as he had to be in coverage, that ability to move laterally came up. So I don't know, man. I like the player. I like him for what he is, but it's gonna be tough to see where exactly he fits and who picks him and whether they do with him, because it's gonna have to be something very specific.
I definitely agree. Definitely agree. So, but I think that's all the linebacker talk we have. Again, next time we'll do running backs and then quarterbacks. I think quarterbacks is just the best way to end. Everybody's going to be listening for that one, obviously. All of our 100 listeners per episode. We're hitting some numbers for being 13 episodes in, so I'm happy with it. We're steadily growing, but so running backs next time. Again, if you have a mailbag question, go on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast, leave a review, put the question in the review. Devin and I will answer it on the pod, and it'll be right there. And then again, as always, check out Homage. Use the link for my Substack. It's in all of the podcast descriptions as well. Click that link, and your boys get a little bit of a kickback if you use that link. So that's always appreciated. But outside of that, Devin, I don't have anything else, man. What do you got, Dad?
Nothing else, man. We're closing in fast on the draft. What a little less than like a month and a half away. It's crazy because like we were waiting for the Senior Bowl, the Combine, those hit back to back, and basically got a little over a month left before first name gets called in Kansas City. So, man, just trying to knock out these evaluations, knock out these position groups. We're almost done with those, and then of course we'll go back later and maybe look at some of those that may have changed, you know, after the combine and pro day workouts and whatnot. But yeah, I'm just excited to get past. I'll be excited once we finish talking about quarterbacks, our quarterbacks episode, and really get into some fun content we have planned. So looking forward to that, man.
Absolutely. All right. Well, until next time. I'm Corey, he's Devin, and this is the Daft on Draft podcast.